Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look at those folks waiting for number 62.
The net's almost unfair. The 2-1. Swung on, there she goes! Number 62! Move over, Big Mac, you got company!
Welcome back, it's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's a nice Monday here in the city of Chicago. 1 degree, minus 10 wind chill. Layla Rahimi in for Mully. Cold outside. It's nice to talk about baseball when it's this cold outside.
Think warm thoughts.
Think warm thoughts. And certainly there was a lot of warmth at the Cub convention that wrapped up over the weekend at the Sheraton Grand. We were there Saturday for Inside the Clubhouse, had a great show with Kyle Tucker and Justin Steele and Tom Ricketts and Crane Kenny. And of course, we played the interview we're going to hear now. Friday night, Bruce Levine and I were lucky enough to have an audience with Sammy Sosa. It's for Sammy's first appearance at the Cub convention in 21 years. There was the applause and ovation and warmth in the room when he was introduced. He did the lap. He had all the hugs. And then Sammy, after the introductions, went backstage. He met with the Marquee Sports Network. He met with us, and then he met with the assembled Chicago sports media. During our conversation, which lasted about 15 minutes, we're going to play right now, it began with Sammy's answer, what was it like being back?
Was incredible. I was waiting this moment for 21 years, so I guess I'm here. Today was the opportunity for me to show the love. They showed me the love also, and I mean, everything went very good. I mean, I'm glad that they put it on the show like the way they're expecting, and hey, you know, another good day.
What was it like seeing some of your old teammates for the first time in a long time, and who might you not have recognized? Anybody?
Well, yeah, I was very happy today to meet everyone. Kerry Wu, Sean Donson, Billy William, you know, Jenke, Andre, I mean, all of them in Ramirez. So I haven't seen this guy for a long time. So, look, they was happy, too, that I'll be back in town now. Pretty much I want to see this guy a little bit more often and looking forward to pretty much continue our friendship.
What was it like for you who had such great stardom and everything was so wonderful during your career to have 21 years of being away from the people that loved you the most and the people you performed for at the highest level?
Well, I think, Bruce, I mean, the time is perfect. So God is great. So that was the time for me to come back here for some reason. I don't know. Maybe God, you know, have a plan for me, which is always does. And today was a beautiful night. I mean, no complaint. I mean, I'm happy. I still have some shield. I went up there and put in the show the way they expected me to do. You know, when I was running like that, remind me right field, you know, when I was running to the bleachers. So, look, you know, I was happy. You know, I make a lot of people happy, and I was proud of that.
You heard the people react to that when you did that. You know, the crowd still remembers those days fondly. So a lot of people have been waiting for this moment for a very long time. Why did it take this long, and how did we get here to this point? Did you reach out to Tom Ricketts and the Cubs? Did they approach you? How would you explain the way you got here tonight?
Well, you know, look, I got a good thing. I decided to put my statement out in the right time, so I did it. I mean, and they respond back to me, and I was very proud, very happy. And also, not only that, I have to say, you know, thanks to Tom Ricky, because, I mean, he respond in the right time. So I guess, you know, he was like me, you know, that was the right time or the right moment for me to be back here.
You spent so much time in Chicago, originally getting traded to the White Sox. I remember Danny Evans telling me the story about how your first year you wanted to get paid, and you asked him to cash the money and bring the cash down. You put $7,000 in your back pocket and played a whole game. You've come a long way from that, Sammy.
Indeed. I mean, look, I mean, coming from Dominican Republic, that was tough. I mean, bringing, get the opportunity that I get, and also, you know, I have a lot of family that you know was waiting for me by then, for me to make it to the show. I did it, and also, you know, my main focus was, you know, play hard, do great, have a great year, so that way I can come back home happy, you know, with a lot of $7,000 in my pocket.
Well, you're here tonight because you reached out. You made a statement a month ago. The Tom Ricketts, they responded to it, so they invited you back into the fold. In your statement, you apologized. For what did you apologize?
Oh, 21 years, buddy. You know what I mean? Look, 21 years haven't been here. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, look, I mean, when you're growing up and you pretty much find the Lord, because I did, and you see things now differently. Before, it was hard for me, you know, to do that. But now, you know, I did it with, you know, I mean, with happiness. I mean, I did it because, you know, look, when I grew up, I mean, when I was playing, you know, I play great every day. I maybe hurt some people that I don't even know about it. So that's why, I say my statements. And I think it was, you know, fantastic. I mean, let's say 90% of the fan was very happy. 10%, you know, like always, is going to be say whatever they want. And, hey, so be.
But were you apologizing for something specific, for the way you played the game or for the way that you hit the home runs? Were you apologizing for anything specific?
Like I say, I was 21 years out. You know, without coming here to Chicago, and believe me, my friend, they love me, they support me, and definitely, that's one of the reasons why I did.
What's the most difficult thing about being one of the most famous people in the world? Because you were hanging around with the Clintons, and you were as famous as anybody this side of Michael Jordan the time you played. What was the hardest part of not being famous anymore? What did you have to get used to?
No, look, I mean, I play great. I had my moment. I mean, I met everybody that I need to be met. But, you know, when you're in that world, I mean, it's different, you know. I mean, but when you met the Lord and you understand, you know, thing that is not making any sense anymore. So you just come down to the reality. So I believe, I mean, I'm a big believer, and that's why, you know, pretty much I'm here today. And, you know, look, I met Clinton, I met Donald Trump, I met a lot of people. In my day, and I was glad and I was happy to do that. But now I'm a different man.
You are in the Cubs Hall of Fame tonight. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How do you feel about not being in the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown?
Well, that's another stage. I mean, normally we go one step at a time. I'm just happy to be at the Chicago Hall of Fame. You know, let's see, what the future bring me here with the Chicago Hall of Fame. So pretty much I'm not thinking about something in the past. I like to go forward.
When you think about teammates, managers, general managers, baseball people, who comes to your mind first when you think about your career and who had the most influence?
Well, a lot of people. First, the Lord, because, I mean, my family. I had to mention Larry Hine, which is believe in me when I was pretty much when no one had to say believe in me. He trained me twice. So I guess he sees something of me that nobody else sees, right? And I did it, and I never let Larry Hine down. And also, pretty much, you know, there's a lot of people in my life that I have to, you know, pretty much remember. But, I mean, you know, managers, players, GM. So, you know, there's a lot of people that that are all favorite too.
How would you describe what your legacy is? And does it bother you at all that it might be tainted to some people?
No, man, don't lie, my friend. I don't really care who think about it or no. You know, my number is my number. Nobody can scratch my number from the board. I don't care what you say. So I'll move forward. You know, I do what I got to do, and I'm happy and I'm glad. And they show me tonight that my number count. So,
this summer you come back to Wrigley Field for the first time in 21 years. You will be able to be honored at the ballpark, mm-hmm. be a part of that ballpark. What have you missed the most about the Chicago fans and Wrigley Field?
everything. You know, I mean, they have a new ballpark. I mean, they have a new clubhouse that I haven't been there. So I want to see everything. You know what I mean? 40,000 square feet. My goodness. When we play, we only have maybe 2,000, you know, square feet clubhouse. So now it's 40,000. And that's one thing that I feel comfortable to. And also, I want to go back to the question that you're talking about. What I'm saying is meaning that, because sometimes people get confused when I'm trying to say something. I don't mean it to offend anybody. I don't. But I believe, you know, I'm a man that I've been through so many things in my life. I have a master and fall, but I have another master and get up and move forward. So I feel comfortable about it. I want to make sure that, we don't go to a different direction.
When you come back, do you one day hope to see your number retired? Do you hope to one day see a statue of Sammy Sosa? What do you hope that?
Everything. Everything. Are you kidding me? Everything. Yes. You know? You know, look. The numbers don't lie, buddy. You know what I mean? With all the light. Look, I'm back. I'm happy. I mean, Tom is a great man. The Chicago organization, you know, they hear. They know the kind of person that I am. You know, because some people got confused sometimes. You don't know me, and you can think, you can say something about me. But when you really met me, you see the difference.
What? Sammy, what's your relationship now with Tom? Have you had some private moments where you've gotten to talk? And are you looking to forge this relationship forward for many years?
I think so, because, he welcomed me to his house, because that's his thing. And also, I'm glad to do that. I'm honored to be here again. And I believe that the whole Chicago organization, you know, Dennis was great, Gene, you know, Giselle, everybody there, because I don't remember everybody's name, but everybody was great. I mean, still going through something. I'm here now, like I said, and I believe the future is going to bring some good things for
me. When people see you, they think of a certain memory, or a flood of memories come back. When you come back here, what is your favorite memory of being a Cub?
Well, I have a lot of memory with me, maybe 21 months, maybe 60, you know, he's 60, 61 here, so I don't know. Look, it was so many opportunities that I have to come through, he's 64, 63, 64, and 66, and the year that I had a home run champion was when I had 50, so you know what I mean? Go ahead.
I want to take you back to 2001.
Okay.
After 9/11, Cubs come home after being on the road. What was that like for you to get that home run and grab that flag from Billy Williams coming around first?
Well, that was incredible because, 9/11 was happening. Everybody was scared. Everybody was a little bit shaky because, we never see something like that. The Twin Tower going down like that, a couple of planes. Come on. I remember that when we have a chance to play the game, I want to do something, like I always do something different, you know what I mean? So I said to Billy, take the flag to first base because I'm going to hit a home run today. I just said it like that. And also, you know what I mean, it happened. And also the flag that I got running to, to right field was incredible too. But I said that to Billy. And then you see in the video that, when I hit the home run, I pass the base and then I come back to get the flag, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that you understood early on that you were not only a ball player and a great ball player, but an entertainer. How did you mesh the two? Because you went out there every day, out to right field, and you got the fans going. I mean, you were an entertainer as much as a ball player.
I remember seeing that movie, The Gladiator. You got to win the crowd. You had to win the crowd. And I had the ability to do that, Bruce, and I did it. I came out very strong. I was focused in what I wanted to do. Physically, mentally, and I believe that was, why he gave me so far, because I was afraid, I'm strong mentally, and when you do that, you can go anywhere.
Final few moments here on Inside the Clubhouse at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine, talking with Sammy Sosa. Sammy, was there somebody in the Cub organization, somebody in Chicago, somebody that you made sure you needed to see when you came back to town for the first time in so long?
Bruce, Bruce, that has been with me for so many years. And outside, I see some couple of reporters that was great to me. And look, actually, everybody nice. People sometimes, they pretty much change their mind when they're going to do something about me. But hey, look, I mean, it's happened. I'm not perfect, but I'm always never forget anybody.
Has it bothered you how you have been portrayed by some people in some circles in Chicago over the years?
Look, I mean, today and age, you know, social media, people want to say whatever they want to say. Now, day and age today, everybody's a reporter. So, look, 90% that approve you and 10% is, not happen. Hey, it's like you win the lottery.
When you look at baseball today, can you sit and watch a whole game or is it difficult for you? And how many home runs would you hit now?
Well, I mean, with all the technology that they have today, it can make it easy because, you got an iPad, you can watch, every pitch, every swing that you do. I mean, normally, when I was playing, normally I had to go back to the clubhouse, the next day see myself. Today you have it here in the clubhouse, when the dugout. So pretty much, it's a great opportunity now. Definitely, I believe that it's, not easy to hit because he's not easy. But, whoever have talent, they have to be focused, stay in the middle, go to right field, and make contact.
Sammy, thank you so much for your time. Welcome back, and really appreciate you spending some time with us.
My pleasure.
Sammy Sosa, that was Friday night with Bruce Levine and me in the interview area at the Sheraton Grand for the Cubs convention. Layla Rahimi in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw back live here. We're going to talk to Bruce Levine in a few moments, Layla, to get his reaction. But my initial response now was the same as I felt then. Obviously, I would have loved more clarity and maybe specificity from Sammy regarding the question about what he was apologizing for. Realistically, I knew that I was not going to get an answer that was specific or one that provided any more clarity. But you had to ask it. And I felt like he came prepared. He had his talking points. And to me, once you get past that ground that you had to cover, overall, I just think the focus was on people being relieved and really kind of overjoyed that Sammy Sosa was back in the fold.
That was the reaction that I received. I don't know if anybody was prepared for the amount that he was going to draw at Cubs convention, if people fully understood that or grasped that. But the hard part is over now. The silence is over. Tom Ricketts responded in kind almost immediately when Sammy made a statement that acknowledged it. And acknowledge is the key word here.
Yeah.
It was enough for the owner of the franchise. I applaud both parties in doing so. Now some sort of bridge can be built and the foundation can be built to be a part of this team.
And one of the more telling, I think, or memorable exchanges, obviously, we're all watching to see how he was with Kerry Wood. We kidded with Big Z about, the boombox legend and the myths and all of those things about who did what when with the boombox, being destroyed in the Cubs clubhouse. But I was really curious how Ryne Sandberg would respond and react to Sammy Sosa's presence. Rhino, obviously, at his Hall of Fame induction speech and after that, has been a very staunch proponent of keeping PED offenders out of the Hall of Fame and playing the game the right way. And so you wondered about that potential for some distance there. And yet there was a good warm moment with Rhino and Sammy. Both guys said the right things. I think if Sammy got I don't know who was the louder applause, but it felt like to me it was in the room that Rhino did, but he is Mr. Cub. He's a cancer survivor and he's fighting it now. Sammy, he was there and Rhino acknowledged, the fact that he had returned. That was a good moment. There were a lot of them over the weekend. And now, as you say, it's a great way to put it. Hard part's over. The next time Sammy comes to town, it's not going to be an issue. The big issue when he comes back will be the people bowing again or whatever they want to do. And I asked him about the jersey retirement or the statue in typical Sammy Sosa fashion. He said, everything, everything.
I think you could hear the relief there. And I'm not discrediting any opinion that Ryne Sandberg has. He is entitled to them all. And people are too. But guess what? You have some people you like on the teams that you watched. You have some people you don't like on the teams that you watched. And that's okay. Nobody's taking that away from you. But some sort of detente needed to happen. And it was enough for Tom Ricketts. And I think that's good enough for me.
And it was good enough for Bruce Levine, and we will talk to Bruce when we come back. It's Mully and Haw, Layla Rahimi in for Mully, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Scoreboard update.
Score update studio brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants. Do it today. College football will decide their national championship tonight. Notre Dame, Ohio State live from Atlanta. And you can hear the coverage beginning at 5:30 on our sister station, News Radio 780 WBBM, beginning again at 5:30. Next Sunday, beginning at 1, the NFC title game right here on the Score. It's Commanders at the Eagles, followed by the AFC title game, Bills at the Chiefs. Tonight on the Score, 9:15 pregame, Bulls at the Clippers. Bulls lost last night in Portland to the Trailblazers, 113-102. The Blackhawks, they'll host the Hurricanes at the UC. Score Update Studio brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants. Do that today.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce has the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Layla Rahimi in for Mully today, having a good conversation about the Cubs convention, Tom Ricketts, and the return of Sammy Sosa, which brings us to our next guest who joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Bruce Levine was with me interviewing Sammy Sosa, and then we had one heck of a show on Saturday morning, Bruce. That was a lot of fun. Welcome. Good morning. How are you?
Welcome. Welcome to winter here. That's what
Yeah. Spring training, how many days away?
I'm walking around in coats in my house. I mean, you know, that's how it is. But, yeah, it was a great weekend. Certainly, you know, people were, I would say, I don't know, I can't put a percentage on it, but a lot of people were happy for Sammy Sosa and were celebrating him coming back and saw an awful lot of those blue jerseys this weekend. That was the talk of the convention other than players. But where do you want to begin, David?
Well, I think that we responded to Sammy, what we just heard. Curious what you thought, you know, professionally and personally. He did give you a shout-out. That was the highlight of the interview. Okay. And just what you thought of Sammy being back in the fold for the first time in 21 years. I know you've kept in touch over at different times throughout that time period. But your reaction to Sammy returning and what he had to say, and frankly, what he didn't say.
Well, I was... The most surprising part to me was, and the, you know, media people have to do their work and ask the questions, but did anybody really think that Sammy was going to say, yeah, I did steroids for X amount of years. I needed to, you know, he was always going to stop short of saying that. He said he did things that were wrong. He said he needed things to help with recovery. You know, I mean, you know, did you as a fan, did you as a media person need to hear him say, yes, I did steroids. Here's when I did them. Here's when there were anabolic steroids. Here's when it was creatine. You know, I mean, I thought it was unnecessary, but I mean, I, as a media person, everybody should have wanted to ask that question because you never know if he's going to be in the mood to actually answer it. So I was surprised by that, but Sammy really glorified in it. I think the number one backstory on it is that the Hall of Famers who had rejected Sammy in the past, the Sandbergs, the Dawsons, people like that, embraced him to come back and said, okay, enough time for us holding any type of grudges about what he did or he didn't do. Welcome to the club, Sammy Sosa.
Yeah, Bruce, I think that's such a good point because so much of this is higher than my pay grade when it comes to how to interpret what happened with Sammy Sosa. I wasn't Major League Commissioner when all this went down, when he was playing and baseball needed a rebound after the strike season of 94. I was watching on TV in Denton, Texas, trying to see if baseball players better than a horrible Rangers team were going to make me happy that day, and they did. It was fun to watch. I know that for a lot of people, they're not going to be satisfied with what answer he gives, but this was the step that needed to happen in order for some sort of relationship to be built.
Yeah, absolutely. And Layla, you know, him going into the Cub Hall of Fame was a part of this as well. Was any of it choreographed because he was going into the Hall of Fame and he was elected? David's on that board. I'm on that, you know, board that vote. I think, yeah, some of it was. You know, it was like, hey, Sammy, we have the votes now. We're going to put you in the Hall of Fame. You know, let's, you know, tell us what we need to say so we can move forward with this and get it out of the way. I think that's the honest way to look at this.
So, Bruce, we were both interviewing Tom Ricketts at the point where he pushed back at the idea that, you know, now that if spending, they're not going to spend like the Mets or the Dodgers or the Yankees, but there will be a reallocation of resources from Cody Bellinger, the $27.5 million he said would be used. And it won't be used on Tanner Scott. He signed with the Dodgers on Sunday, and it won't be used on other people. You wonder, is Pete Alonso in the mix? But what's next for the Cubs? Because I do think we both agreed coming out of that interview, when Tom said they're not done, it echoed what Jed said earlier, a day earlier, that they're not done. If they're not done, what's next for the Cubs this offseason?
Well, I think they have to get a closer. And they were, you know, they came in second. They came in fourth on the Japanese pitcher. They came in second on Yates. Again, does anybody think, you know, paying $72 million for 4 years for Tanner Scott, who's been really good the last 2 years, but, you know, is certainly, you know, at age 38, you know, are you really thinking you're going to get 4 years at $18 million a year out of him? I know most fans will be saying, we don't care. You know, you're not supposed to get the most out of a pitcher, you know, for the entire contract. Well, I think he should. That was ridiculous. So congratulations to the Dodgers. The next step is, you know, either Kirby Yates or Carlos Estevez. These are two really good closers. The problem with Yates is he's 38, coming off of one of his better years, but prior to that, you know, stumbled a little bit. And Estevez is a little bit of an unknown, but a guy that throws 100 miles an hour. And with Philadelphia, you know, 4-1 strikeout ratio, you know, 57 saves the last couple of years. Then there is, you know, the fall off after that. You know, you talk about Jansen, you talk about David Robertson coming back, you know, guys that are 37, 38, 39 years old. They had good years last year, but, you know, can you count on these things not being a Neris disaster again if you bring in an older back of the end?
Heart attack, Hector!
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, age does matter when it comes to you're looking at power arms and getting people out.
Well, and it's funny that Kenley Jansen is mentioned because I feel like he's been living on the edge for years. Yeah, we've been trying to figure out at what point the Dodgers were going to move on from him and what was left in the tank. So to have him still be in the discussion says a lot about who's available. It also makes me wonder how devoted they are to the concept of going with Porter Hodge if one of the big names isn't there.
They'll go with Hodge, but that's not enough. I mean, you know.
Agreed.
He's a power arm, and he really showed up big. They have high hopes that he's going to be one of the top closers in the game. If he's not, then you have to have number two. You know, you have to have, where are you going to plan B? You have to have depth in the bullpen. I think they have depth in starting pitching. I think they're comfortable with that. They'd certainly like to add a power arm in the rotation, no doubt about that. But they don't have depth in the bullpen. They don't have depth at the bench. And the bench is really key when you're going to start another kid at third base. And another takeaway that was big was that Horner couldn't really tell anybody at the convention when he's going to be back, okay? He says he's progressing along, but he couldn't tell you if it was going to be April 1st or it's going to be May 15th. They couldn't tell you that. So they have to be prepared with a really good bench, and the bench was one of the worst in baseball last year. You know, Craig Council and I, you know, sparred about that at the convention a little bit. He said, well, Bruce, you can't call one of the worst benches in baseball. I said, it was what it was. You know, the guys were nice guys. They tried hard, but they weren't very good. You know, other than Mike Tauchman, who was outstanding and had to play full time in the first part of the season, pretty much, the bench wasn't very good. So those are things that they have to take care of here. And the good news was that Tom told us that they are putting the money back into the team. You know,
I love it when you spar. I'm just glad it's not me sometimes, and you go at it with Craig Council. That was impressive, Bruce. Good pushback. Okay, so bring us up to date on Alex Bregman. If the Cubs get Alex Bregman, a lot of this conversation about how they reallocate the resources takes on a different tone.
It really does, because the assumption is that the Cubs would only be in on a 1 to 3 year basis, you know, kind of like a pillow contract, a modern pillow contract, where it's 1 to 3 years, like the Bellinger deal was. Okay, and they stealthily were able to get out of the Bellinger deal when they didn't expect him to come back and pick up his option for $30 million, and they traded him. Everybody was upset about it because, you know, the lineup was going to look a lot better with Bellinger and Tucker in there rather than just Tucker replacing Bellinger. So they need that other bat there. Bregman's having a hard time getting 5 or 6 years elsewhere. Doesn't necessarily want to go to Detroit. Turned down $156 million for 6 years. Regrets it. But there doesn't seem to be that type of deal out there right now. He would like to come to Chicago. From the people that I talked to that are friends with him, he would like to come to Chicago, but I don't think there's not a 5 or 6 year deal waiting for him here. So the Cubs are waiting to see if it drops or not. And I don't think that a lot of people feel comfortable with giving Bregman 6 years at $25 million. He just hasn't played up to that. He didn't have a great year last year. He's going into his age 31 season. So again, spending the owner's money, not spending the owner's money, that's, you know, that's a full-time job for Chicago fans in all the sports.
Yeah, he's tricky because I feel like, Bruce, you do ask the question immediately. I do. What about the Astros deal was insufficient to you? Or what was the mindset when you decided to not take it? But the other piece of this is the market is going to dictate what the years on his contract are.
Right.
And the part that we haven't said is, in looking for the offense, we need to look for a lot of it on the existing team, because that's who Dansby Swanson and Seiya Suzuki, for example, were paid to be. I want to see how he feels after this core injury surgery. I want to see how that goes. You know, that's very important when it comes to trying to figure out how they want to add. What is the realistic expectation offensively for those two next year?
I think it's a great point, Layla. The idea that Swanson admitted he was playing with an injury for a year and a half. You admire him for playing with it. You also wonder why he didn't speak up more when he had it and let you know that I'm playing at three-quarters strength. it's a conundrum for any type of athlete who wants to live up to a contract, wants to live up to the team, had played all the games in Atlanta, and then the idea that he's not the player he was, and we certainly saw that in the numbers that he put up last year, which weren't very good until maybe later in September. But, you know, there were other interesting takeaways from there. PCA talking about the fact that he was hesitant. I think he was on our afternoon show talking about the fact that he's stopped stealing. I asked I asked counsel about that, and he said that he was aware and that he was surprised a little bit that he stopped stealing too, that he became more hesitant. And the Crane Kenny telling us that the Cubs should be first in line for the All-Star game if everything works out in 2027.
We got only a minute left, Bruce, but let's expand on that, because I think of all the content that we got, there was a lot there on Saturday morning, but Crane Kenny snuck that in and talked about how he's working with Mayor Johnson and his administration. And this is basically about the neighborhood around Wrigley, protecting it to the point where Major League Baseball would feel comfortable having the All-Star game at Wrigley.
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it, David. You know, they've been trying. If you've been around Wrigley the last 2 years, they have barriers that they put in during the game now, gates that you can't get through. But Major League Baseball is worried about, you know, some type of truck being able to pour into Wrigley Field, and a disaster could happen. And being able to guard the perimeters of Addison and Clark, you know, two main thoroughfares, it's very difficult for Major League Baseball to get their head around as to how that's going to happen, not only for the All-Star game, but the home run derby and the whole week of All-Star festivities. It's a major coup to get it, and it's a major nightmare for a big city with a ballpark with housing and stores right around it. It's very difficult. It's not like Fenway. Fenway, not the same thoroughfares that go through it. So it's something they'd like to figure out. Hopefully, it'll happen. The Cubs' luck would be they get the game in all 2027 and there's a lockout.
Oh, boy. That would not be something anybody
Bruce
would
Bruce Levine called it on January 20th, 2025.
Great stuff, Bruce. Have a fun weekend. Take care.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks, Bruce.
Bruce Levine, our baseball expert here on The Score, predicting gloom for 2027. Although, you know what? The threat of the lockout was kind of the backdrop to everything that Tom Ricketts had to say about the Cubs losing money and the contract approach and spending across the game. And the decline of the RSNs, all kinds of things are related to concerns over what's going to happen in 2027. All right,
and back, the length of every player's contract, too.
Exactly. The free agency and how it affects Alex Bregman's commitment. You don't want to commit to something you might not be able to enjoy. All right, that's our baseball conversation. We're going to get back now to the Bears and the coaching search and what people are saying about what they have to do this week, what they might be losing or gaining. So we're going to talk Bears. When we come back, we've got the national championship conversation with Eric Hansen from Inside ND Rivals, who was in Atlanta for Notre Dame, Ohio State. A lot more to come. It's Layla Rahimi in for Mully. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
When you're at a school like in Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame, these blue blood schools, there is some pressure that comes along with it, but it's a good pressure because it keeps you your competitive edge at a high level.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Layla Rahimi in for Mully today. That was Eddie George on the Big College Football Show on the Chicago Sports Network, CHSN. Eddie George is a weekly contributor to the show hosted by Jake Butt and Joshua Perry. Eddie George, really good analyst. Eddie George, head coach at Tennessee State. Didn't really expect to say Eddie George, Bears coaching candidate, Layla. Surprising news to wake up to Sunday morning. We heard it Saturday night to consider his candidacy as the Bears head coach. Not one of the names I thought would be on the list. Nonetheless, he is. They interviewed him. And now, biggest takeaway from that is, number one, Eddie George, impressive individual. Number two, the Bears are Rooney Rule compliant.
Yes. It's annoying that it's a formality, but they've interviewed in total more candidates than that, but they had to have two in person to satisfy that requirement. Ron Rivera being one of them. How do you feel about the Ron Rivera interview now that you see what's happened with the Commanders this year?
Well, I feel like Ron Rivera in Chicago makes more sense to interview than Ron Rivera in Vegas or any other organization where he does not have a past that makes him different in the eyes of ownership.
Massive history. Yes.
Definitely. He's part of the he's been part of the two best teams in the last 40 years.
Right.
The only two teams in Bears history to play in a Super Bowl. Ron Rivera was a linebacker on one of them and the defensive coordinator on the other. So his inclusion isn't as eye-opening or surprising as others, or it would be if he were, you know, interviewed for his third go-around with the Raiders, the Saints, or somebody like that.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. When people talk about certain interviews requiring a certain requirement or meeting a certain requirement, I don't know that he falls into that category.
Mm-hmm.
It made sense as to why his was in person. When Ryan Pohl said there are some names on this list that you're going to be surprised by, Matt Campbell was one for me.
David Shaw was one for
me. Eddie George is now in that on that list.
Eddie George. We'd not surprised to see him in Chicago, the musical, but we were surprised to see him in Chicago as a Bears head coaching candidate.
But as you pointed out, and we've discussed a little bit earlier on the show today, and if you missed it, you can go back and listen on the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app. That is how I listen to the Pick Six every day.
Awesome.
To Mully and Ha. I'm not up that early usually. No, it's the truth. I'm just confessing. I don't wake up that early. There is some history with Eddie George having been in the building. He and Randy Shannon were part of the Bears coaching staff for OTAs a couple years ago as part of the Bill Walsh Diversity Coaching Fellowship. So I don't mind them getting him in the building because he's been here before. If he has something to add, if he had something that he observed, how do you respect his opinion? And I think that that is a good part of this process.
I think that's a big part of the process. Now they also have the opportunity to hire somebody if they want to pounce on Mike McCarthy, if they get intel on Ben Johnson that they don't like. According to Diana Rossini and others, Ben Johnson will now, the timetable is vague, but he can conduct interviews with the teams that want to interview him, the Jaguars, the Raiders, and the Bears. But it doesn't say that he will interview with all three teams. You wonder what direction this is headed. You know that the Vegas Raiders, with minority owner Tom Brady, 5% ownership stake, he's already been involved with interviewing general manager candidates like Lance Newmark, who has a past with Ben Johnson. The path is clearer in Vegas than it is in Chicago because of the presence of Ryan Poles. That may sound like it's unfair to Ryan Poles, but it's just the truth. If Ben Johnson wants contract alignment or an unimpeded path to power and say in the 53-man roster, he has that in Vegas in a way that he won't in Chicago.
Yes, but I'm thinking if there's something that prevents me as a head coaching candidate from working with Caleb Williams, and I'm not there. He's not a drawback to anybody's head coaching candidacy. It, to me, clearly becomes about process, right? It's you want your quarterback come hell or high water, and maybe for some reason he has something that you don't like, or you just want to be able to evaluate your quarterback your way. That's the only way that separates for me, that part of it.
If Ben Johnson says no to the Bears, though, in part because Ryan Poles is there, that's a miss by the Bears. That's a miscalculation by the Bears, if indeed Ben Johnson was their plan A.
If you lost out on the best head coaching candidate of the cycle, then yes, for any other reason, there's nobody who's a must keep for me in the front office.
I would agree with that. I've been saying that all along, and we'll see what direction this takes. This is a very pivotal week. Might be the week the Bears find their head coach. We'll get back to the coaching search before the end of the program, but we're going to talk next to a guy I've known for a very long time, since essentially the last era that Notre Dame won the national championship, the Lou Holtz era. Eric Hansen, longtime writer of the South Bend Tribune, now works for InsideNDRivals.com, is our next guest. He's in Atlanta, and he's going to be talking to us about Notre Dame and Ohio State. They will play for the national championship tonight. Marcus Freeman versus his alma mater, although he does not want to talk about his days as an Ohio State Buckeye. We'll talk to Eric Hansen next, and a little college football here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.